Okay, we're going to hopefully finish Mishnah Vav today and start Mishnah Zayin. Let's just review Mishnah Vav and add a little bit that I want to add, and then we'll start the next Mishnah. Rav Nechunya ben Akana Omer, kol ha-mekabel alav ol Torah, a person who accepts upon himself the yoke of Torah. And we've spoken about this yoke, even though it's a tremendous simcha or whatever, but it's a responsibility, and it's not something that comes easy. So mavirim imenu al malchus vol derech eretz, it's taken off from him the yoke of serving the government and the yoke of earning a living. And we explained this idea that there is a minority of the Jewish people that have to be devoted to Torah totally, and by accepting upon themselves the yoke of Torah, so they're doing it totally altruistically for the sake of the Klal Yisrael, for the sake of the Rabbanu Shel Olam, and therefore they deserve to be supported by the rest of the nation. And also they deserve not to have to go into the army or whatever, because they are serving the Rabbanu Shel Olam and his spiritual army. V'chol ha-porik mimenu ol Torah, but a person who will see, even if he had originally accepted this yoke, but he throws it off, then nosnim olav ol malchus, well, then he receives again the yoke of government and the yoke of earning a living. Okay. Just an aside, the midah of good, right? Things that are good always are done in a better way than things that are bad. In other words, they're not equal midah tova, meruba, midah peronios 500 times. So here it says a person who accepts upon himself to immerse himself in the yoke of Torah, even if he hasn't done it yet. He's just accepted that responsibility. Already we take off of him from the heavens the yoke of earning a living and the yoke of the government. But a person who has that already, even if he intends to stop until he actually takes it off himself, doesn't have to receive again the yoke of earning a living and the yoke of the government. For the good, just the intention to do it is enough. For the bad, you have to actually do it in order to get the bad results. Okay? Okay, one last point. We spoke about a few points over here. We spoke about the idea of how important it is to accept something upon yourself. We spoke about the idea of Torah on the one hand being an all, at the same time being a tremendous benefit and opportunity. And we spoke about people earning a living and learning Torah and people devoted to Torah only and the parameters of both, and that there's room in Klal Yisrael for both of them. The last thing we have to speak of is idea of all. Person in this world has to accept upon himself some yoke. This world, the Gemara says, based on the Pasuk in Iyov, Adam la'amal yulad. People were created to toil. And the Gemara says, what is this toil? Ve'eni yodeya im la'amal malacha im la'amal pet. I don't know if that toil is physical labor or verbal toil. When it says, ki ikaf alav piyu, right after that it says something about using your mouth, so I know that the main toil is not physical toil, it's spiritual verbal toil. And I still don't know if that means stam, to talk, sicha, conversation, or Torah. When it says, v'agisa b'yom v'alayla, a person should meditate on the Torah day and night, then I know that it means Torah
speaking Torah. The Chafetz Chaim says, what in the world was the thought to begin with, that a person was created to toil physically? That's the purpose of people in this world, to work? That's it? And I need a pasuk to tell me that's not the case? And then I know that it means to toil with your mouth, but I might think it's just to talk. I mean, there are people who think that we're created to talk, but I need a pasuk to tell me that it means Torah. What does it mean? The Maral explains Amal as taking something from its potential and actualizing it. That's Amal. Amal means toil. Toil means taking something, again, potential and actualizing it, bringing it out. That's called toil. This world, why did God create this world? Why are people born into this world? So the rabbis tell us that God's original intention was to create a being that he could shower his goodness on, because God, being the ultimate good, wanted to shower his good on a creation. And that good was himself. That's the ultimate good, a relationship with God. So God intended to create our neshamos, which are the closest thing to him, and to create an eternal, intimate relationship with our neshamos, where we could cleave and kibiyachol become one with God. And that is the ultimate pleasure. And that's what we call Olam Haba. Olam Haba is Tzadikim Yoshvim. Tzadikim sit. The Nehenem Yiziv Hashchina. Vatoseim Barosheim. They have their crowns on their head. And they bask in the pleasure of God's presence. That is the ultimate eternal reward. So God should have created souls, put them into Olam Haba, into the world to come, give him that relationship, and finished. What do you need this world for? So the rabbis tell us that God knew that if he would give the souls that pleasure, unearned, it wouldn't be the ultimate pleasure. Because people, what they get unearned is not as appreciated as what you earn. So in order for that pleasure to be the ultimate pleasure, the ultimate reward, it had to be earned. In addition, that the way that our souls get that relationship with God is being God-like. The more we're like God, and to be like God, you can't get something from someone else. It has to be intrinsic to yourself, because God gets nothing from anyone. He doesn't need anything. He's perfect. So the more a person reaches perfection, but he reaches perfection not because it's given to him by someone, but it's created internally, is even greater. So we were put in this world that we should create our perfection. For those two reasons, we had to be in this world. And so the Rabbanu Shalom gave us the ability to earn that connection with him. And we earn it by being like him, doing things that are like the Rabbanu Shalom, perfecting ourselves, and perfecting the world along with us, and bringing the world to its perfection too. It's not just individual perfection. God wants the world to reach perfection too. It's the ultimate goal of everything. And by doing it ourselves, earning it ourselves and not having it just conferred upon us, that's more God-like too. God doesn't have anything conferred upon him. It's all intrinsic to his perfection. So by us creating it within ourselves, so we're more God-like also. That perfection is more God-like, and therefore the connection to God is greater. And in this respect, we create our world to come. And that's the whole purpose of this world. I'll tell you a medrash that brings this point out. The medrash says that there were two wicked people who were partners in crime in this world. They robbed, they murdered, very despicable people. One of them died, and he went to Gehenna. He's being punished and suffering in Gehenna for an amount of time. It doesn't say how long. And one day he looks up and he sees that they are escorting the soul of his partner into Gan Eden. So he calls the angel that is appointed over the neshamas in Gehenna, and he says there must have been a computer error because that guy was my partner. When I stole, he stole. When I murdered, he murdered. And if he belongs in Gan Eden, so do I. Get me out of here. And if I belong in Gehenna, so does he. Bring him here to keep me company. The angel comes back. He says, I checked on it. There's no mistake. He belongs there. You belong here. The guy says, I get it. He bribed somebody. Tell me how much and who, and I'll be happy to give double. The angel says, I'm sorry. There is no bribery here. She says, and tell me, why is my partner in Gan Eden and I'm in Gehenna? He says, you don't know what happened after you died. You see, when you died, you dropped dead in the street. And because you were such a despicable person, nobody wanted to bury you, and they left your body unburied for 3 days lying in the street. After 3 days, some benevolent person kicked your body into a hole in the side of the road, and that's where you're buried. When your partner saw this, it made an impression on him. And he said to himself, is this the way I want to end my life? Someday I'll drop dead and nobody wants to bury me? So he started to rethink his whole mode of living. And eventually he repented and he died a perfectly righteous man. And therefore he's in Gan Eden and you're in Gehenna. You never repented. When I say this over and women are here, I have to add the following. Because you are thinking it's not fair. Why? Because the second guy had somebody to learn from. The first guy didn't have anybody to learn from. But it's not true. The Medrash is not telling us the life story of these two people. It's just telling us to bring out the point. So let me make you feel good so you don't think about this the rest of the shiur. Right? The first guy had somebody he could have learned from too. And he didn't. The second guy could have ignored what happened to the first guy and he didn't ignore it.
Oh.
So in any case, okay, get that out of your mind. It's fair. Okay.
Why would you distinguish women from
that? Because I've never had a man ask me that question. And every time I give this shiur, some woman pops up with, it's not fair.
Got a kavod for women.
Okay, in any case. So the angel, so the guy says, oh, that's great. I thought it's going to cost me money. I'm willing to repent too. If I would have known what's going to happen to me, right? I never would have done it. I regret doing it. I'll never do it again. Just tell me what to say. I repent. Get me out of here and put me in Gan Eden. The angel says, I'm sorry, but it's a little late. Don't you know the world you came from is like Erev Shabbos? And the world you're in now is like Shabbos. If you prepare Erev Shabbos, you have what to eat on Shabbos. You didn't prepare anything in the other world. You come now, and now you want to repent? Now it's like preparing a meal on Shabbos. Too late. And don't you know, the angel said, the world you came from is like the dry land. And the world you're in now is like the sea. If you prepare your boat before you set sail in the middle of the ocean, you have what to eat. You set sail with an empty boat, and now you want to get supplies in the middle of the ocean. There's no supermarkets here. You can't do tshuva now. You should have done tshuva before you came here. And lastly, the angel says, and don't you know, the world you came from is like the city, and the world you're in now is like the desert. If you prepare yourself in the city, you can survive the desert. But if you go into the desert without a survival kit, you can't get it in the desert. You're in the desert now. Forget it. And the guy realizes that this is something he can't correct, and he bemoans his fate. This medrash is on the pasuk in Koheles, Me'uvas lo yichol lishkon. There are certain things that are crooked and can't be corrected, certain things that are missing and can't be compensated for. This is one of the examples. If you didn't prepare in this world, you can't make up for it in the next world. Okay. Two things bother me about this medrash. Firstly, there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which we didn't get to yet, where the Mishnah says, Ha'olam hazeh doma leprozdor bifnei ha'olam haba. This world is like a preparation room to a castle. Prepare yourself in the preparation room, you should be able to get into the castle. why didn't the angel quote him a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos? Didn't you know the world you came from is like the preparation room, and the world you're in now is the castle? You didn't prepare yourself in the preparation room. Can't get in the castle. Why did he give him three examples and not the one in Pirkei Avos? Second question is, why did the guy need three examples? I'm sure he got the message after the first one. It's basically saying the same thing in different words. Erev Shabbos and Shabbos, dry land and sea, city and desert. Basic bottom line is, you're supposed to prepare yourself before you got here. Why three different Mishalim? I said this over years ago in my Moshav, and one of my Balabatim, who's now one of my Mechutanim, his daughter married my son, he said to me, Rabbi, you don't understand. That's Gehenna, listening to long drushes that aren't necessary. In any case, I don't accept that as a rabbi. So what's the answer? Why do you need three Mishalim? I think the answer is the following. The real way of understanding this world vis-a-vis the next world is what it says in Pirkei Avos. This world is a preparation room to a castle. Let's analyze that example. Why do you build a preparation room for a castle? For one purpose, to prepare to go in the castle. It's not built for any other purpose. Its entire purpose is to be a place to prepare to go in the castle. What do you equip it with? Nothing except things to prepare to go in the castle. Hair dryers, combs, whatever you need to prepare to get in the castle, that's what's in the room. There's no ping pong tables in the room because it's not made for that. It's made only to prepare to go in the castle. What do you do in that room? Prepare to go in the castle. You don't do anything else there, right? They don't have pidyon habens there. They don't have bar mitzvahs there. They have one thing, prepare to go in the castle. It's not made for any other purpose. It's not equipped for any other purpose. And it's not used for any other purpose. That's this world. This world has one sole purpose. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been created. God intended this whole world, everything in it, for one part, to give people the ability to create their world to come. That's it. There's nothing in this world that doesn't serve that purpose. There's nothing you're supposed to do here except that purpose, and it wasn't created for any other purpose. That doesn't mean you sit in a corner and say Tehillim, preparing for the next world. It means that every single thing that a person does in this world can somehow create eternity. Everything. Not just coming to a shir. Entertainment, anything. Physical work, whatever it may be. Right? If you do it in a way that's godly, then you make your neshama more godly. If you do it in a way that's ungodly, then you make your neshama less like God. Either you're creating your world to come or you're losing it. There's nothing in this world that is not for that purpose, because that world wasn't created for any other purpose. That is the real comparison of this world to the next one, what it says in Pirkei Avos. But go tell a wicked person who lived his whole life in crime, didn't you know the whole purpose of this world is to prepare for the world to come? Of course he didn't know that. And it's not going to help now to tell him, because he didn't become a great philosopher now, he just became dead. And Rishoyim, even when they're dead, don't change. So the Malach didn't waste his breath to tell this person, didn't you know what it says in Pirkei Avos, that the whole purpose of this world is like a preparation room for the castle? So he didn't tell him that. But he said, look, maybe you didn't understand the real purpose of this world, that everything is merely to prepare for the world to come. But in your mind, maybe this world was like Erev Shabbos, and the next world like Shabbos. Different thing. Erev Shabbos isn't totally for the purpose of preparing for Shabbos. You eat breakfast Erev Shabbos. You may go to work. A good portion of Erev Shabbos is to prepare for Shabbos. Maybe that you understood. That the major part of this world is to prepare. Not everything, but at least the major part. So why didn't you prepare? And even if that you didn't understand. But in your mind, this world was like the dry land and the next world like the sea. Equal importance. But you knew one day your boat's going to set sail. Why didn't you prepare? And even if that you didn't understand, and in your mind this world was a city, this is it, and the next world in your mind was a desert, wasteland, worthless, weren't interested, But you knew one day you're going to have to go to the desert. Why don't you prepare a survival kit? So either you didn't believe or you didn't care. Therefore, you deserve to be where you are. That's the meaning of the Midrash. But the real outlook and perspective of this world vis-a-vis the next world is that it's totally made to create the world to come. Not just earn it, create it. Why? Because we said that God knew that if we got it for free, we wouldn't appreciate it, and it wouldn't be totally becoming God-like because we need somebody else to give it to us. And God doesn't get anything from anybody else. So therefore, it had to be earned. But it would not be the ultimate pleasure if it was earned and not created. Example, you want one of these very plush reclining chairs for your birthday. And you're hoping your Aunt Matilda will give it to you.
I told this at the Shabbos table, this Shabbos.
And she comes through, she gives you the chair for your birthday, you sit in it, you'd enjoy it. What happens if Aunt Matilda decides to get you a sweater and not the chair? Now you really want this chair. So you go to work for a month to earn enough money to buy the chair. After the month, you take your wages and you go and buy the chair and you sit in it. Do you think you'll appreciate it more than if your aunt had given it to you? Yeah, you worked a month and now you're sitting in that chair that you bought with your hard-earned money. What happens if they don't sell the chair where you are? So you plant trees and you raise them until you can cut them down for lumber and you make the frame of the chair. And then you mine iron and make it into nails and knock it together. Then you raise sheep and you use the wool for the stuffing of the chair. You raise cotton, make it into material, and make the upholstery of the chair. You've now made the chair. Now you sit in it. You think you'd appreciate it even more than if you bought it? Of course. So what do you see? What you earn is more precious than what you get for free, and what you create is more precious than what you earn. So in order for the world to come to be the ultimate, it's not that we earn it. We create it. How do you create it? By making your neshama more godlike. The more godlike you are, the more of a relationship you have with God, because you have a connection. The less godlike you are, the less connection you have after 120 years. And every single thing we do in this world can create that perfection of our neshama. How do we know what's godlike? We got a Torah. Torah tells us those kind of things that are godlike and those that are ungodlike. But it's not only those mitzvahs and averus. That is the guidebook for every single thing we do in this world can be done in a way that we're doing it in a godlike way. And the Torah is the guide. What constitutes a godlike way and what constitutes a not godlike way? And you can apply it to everything in life. So every second we can create more and more of the world to come. There's one question here that could be asked, which we will address. And that is, if the whole purpose of this world was because God knew that people appreciate what they earn more than what they get for free, God didn't have to create this world. He could have saved a lot of time and energy and money. And he could have done one thing, change the rule that people appreciate what they earn more than what they don't earn. Who made up that rule? God could have created souls that appreciate what they don't earn. Why do you have to create this world for? Just change the rule. The answer to that question is there is no answer that we could possibly understand. Why? Because that answer would have to make us understand God's mind before creation. And that's impossible. Explain to you why. Our minds are limited to understanding that which we have a connection to, which is in our realm. I'll bring you two proofs to that, and then we'll see how it applies to here. Close your eyes and picture nothing. OK? Okay? Nothing in your mind. Some people go through life like that all the time. Okay? Nothing.
I can't imagine how to...
Okay, you have pictured nothing in your mind. Take your hand and put it into that nothing. Okay, you have your hand now in the nothing? Yeah, that's not nothing. That's space. Nothing means no space. Now try again. Close your eyes and picture no space. It's impossible. You get a headache. You can't imagine no space. You know why? Because we have no point of contact with that. We live in a world where there's always space. So it's out of our realm. Imagine, I'll give you another example. Imagine something you never saw and never heard of. It's impossible. If you never saw and never heard of it, you have no concept of it. What can you imagine? A monster with 10 heads, 5 legs, or whatever. Heads and legs, you know, just putting it together. But something you never heard or never saw at all, ever, is impossible to imagine. We are limited to what we have within our point of reference. That's our minds can only fathom that. So you may ask, how do we fathom God? The answer is, we only fathom God as he relates to the world. The greatest name we have for God, which we don't say, is Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, which means God who is the creator who brought everything into creation. That's it. And any other name beyond that, we don't have a name for God. We call him Ein Sof. He's infinite, but that's a cop-out. That means we have no idea what we're talking about. So names of God is God within creation. That's why the Mishnah says you're not allowed to ask what came before creation and what's beyond creation. And that's why the Beis of Bereishis is closed on three sides. What came before Bereishis is closed. What's above and below. The only thing you can ask is after creation. What we have a point of reference to in creation, we can ask. What came before creation? Not because we don't have a form of reference. Asking why God couldn't have created a different kind of world where people appreciate what they don't earn is a question on God's mind before creation. That's beyond our comprehension.
Why is
that
forbidden?
1 second. The most we can say is once God created the world the way we know it and we have a connection with, what are we supposed to learn from that? But why it couldn't be different is impossible for us to understand. It's beyond our comprehension. So there's no answer. That is the answer. The answer is that God can do whatever he wants. But for some reason, God knew that in creating a world, this is the way it has to be created. That's a given. So why it couldn't have been differently is beyond our comprehension.
Why is it forbidden to think before creation? Why is it not
forbidden,
stuyot?
Right, no, because thinking about things that are stuyot is a waste of time and is forbidden.
Oh, okay.
The memela, what's it called? That's just an aside. So that is the purpose of this world, to basically take what is potential. God gave us that potential to perfect ourselves and perfect the world along with us. It's not just ourselves. And we are supposed to therefore realize that potential in bringing out our perfection. And that is exactly what Amal is. That's what a person was created, La'amal, to toil, meaning to bring out his potential perfection and actualize it as much as possible. That's what this world is all about. Now, that's done in many ways. We are supposed to perfect the world along with us, right? God created an imperfect world, raw materials, and we're supposed to perfect it and bring the world to perfection and bring ourselves to perfection and basically bring the world to perfection through ourselves. That is the whole idea of the following Medrash. The Medrash says that Turnus Rufus HaRosha asked Rabbi Akiva the following question. What is better, what people make or what God makes? Now, he expected Rabbi Akiva to answer what God makes is better than what people make. And then Turnus Rufus would have said the following. If you admit that what God makes is what better than people makes, so we Goyim are better than you Jews. because you Jews are the way a Moel made you, and we're the way God made us. We're the way we were created naturally. You were what's it called, were worked on by a Moel. So Rabbi Akiva surprised him, and he said, of course, what people make is better than what God makes. So Tunis Rufus said, what are you talking about? He said, simple. You're going home to eat lunch. Your wife made cake and bread. God made wheat. Take your pick. Right? I'll take the cake and bread over the wheat any day. So you see, what people make is better than what God makes. What was the intention? God made, like we said, an imperfect world, and he wants us to perfect ourselves and perfect the world. So what we make is better because that was God's intention. You perfect it. I'm giving you the raw materials. It tells Rosh Hashiva, says that's what it means. Asher bara Elohim la'asos. God created the world that people should then finish it off and perfect it. La'asos. So that is the idea. Adam la'amal yulad. This is what the Chofetz Chaim means. So there's a lot of ways of perfecting the world. One way is through malacha, through physical labor, we perfect the world that God made. God gave us a imperfect raw material world, and we take it and we perfect it. We create from the raw materials, right? We plant or whatever and bring out things that are more perfect. We take the world and we create technology and use the raw materials to make things more perfect. So maybe that's the purpose, to perfect the world physically. Says the Gemara, that is a very nice purpose, but that's not the main thing. The main thing is to use your speech, which is what's unique to human beings, and perfect the world through your speech. So it says, okay, maybe the perfection of the world through speech is sicha. Sicha can mean conversation between people, and sicha can mean davening, tefillah. Both of those things also perfect the world. We perfect the world by prayer, and we perfect the world by interaction between people. People, that's how we create society. That's why by Migdal Bavel, when God wanted to destroy that society, he made it they couldn't speak to each other. They couldn't understand each other. They spoke different languages. So you can't have a creative society if people can't converse. They can't have conversation one with the other. They can't communicate with each other. So that's also important. That's still not the main way of perfecting this world is through Torah. The Torah perfects the human being because it's part of his soul, and it has an effect on his body and his soul, and it has an effect on the spiritual and physical world. That's Torah. So that's the main perfection. That's what it means. So that's what it means. Adam la'amal yulad, a person was created to toil. Toil meaning bring out your potential, actualize your potential. And that's the purpose of this world. So that's the idea of all Torah. That's the idea of accepting the yoke of Torah. Yoke means that you put in effort, and from that effort comes a realization of some kind of goal. What do you put in all a yoke on an animal in order that it should plow and bring out its potential strength, should then be translated into something that you're bringing out and realizing the purpose of that strength is to plow the ground and sow the seeds and have a result. That's the idea of all. Right? We were wondering, why is it a yoke? It seems to be a negative. No, a yoke just means you're accepting to exercise your potential and realize it. That's the yoke. And this is the whole idea of Bris Milah. You're created imperfect, and you have to begin to be perfected. And it's not even your choice per se. It's done to you by an adult. Your parents are supposed to bring that perfection and set you on the path. I want to explain, that's Shalom Zachar, right? One of the ideas of the Shalom Zachar is that the child learns This is both men and women. Why we don't make a Shalom Zachar for women? Because this has a lot to do with the bris, which we'll see. But a child learns, goyim too, pashtus. Men, women, goyim, learn all the Torah before they're born. Malach, for 9 months, teaches them all the Torah. Now, a goy learns his seven mitzvahs. And a Jew learns their whole Torah. And just before he's born, the malach hits him on the lip, and he forgets everything. So we come to be Menachem Avil. The child just learned, lost the entire Torah. So we come to comfort him. Shabbos, Friday night, that's Shalom Zachar. Okay. That's one of the reasons for Shalom Zachar. So and another reason is that before you're going to see God, come to the bris, you have to go through the secretary. That's Shabbos. You have to have a Shabbos before the bris. So I want to say like following. Very difficult to understand. First of all, why would a malach spend 9 months teaching this kid and knowing he's going to forget everything? What's the purpose? And secondly, if we're coming to comfort a mourner, he's mourning over the Torah he lost, the Gemara says you don't go to comfort mourners on Shabbos. Unless you have no other chance to go during the week, then you can go Shabbos. But otherwise, you go during the week. Bekoshi tiru nichum aveilum b'Shabbos. With very big difficulty, is it okay to go be Menachem Avil on Shabbos? So why did they make a Shalom Zachar if the whole purpose is nichum aveilum? Why did they make it on Shabbos? Also, there's a custom, therefore, to serve arbis, chickpeas, because that is meichel aveilum. That's what you give to an avil. But that's not what we give to an avil. We give hard-boiled eggs to an avil. So why don't they serve hard-boiled eggs by the Shalom Zachar, or give arbis to the aveilum? To answer all those questions, I want to say the following. The reason that a child learns everything before he's born is because Torah is not a physical thing, it's a spiritual thing. So in this physical world, it would be impossible for a person to integrate Torah into the gray matter of his brain. It's not a physical thing that can just go like any other wisdom into your brain. It has to be there, and has to be, inculcated by an angel. So it's like a computer. You have to put into the hard drive, right, into its memory, all the things that now you can use to compute. It's there, but you have to access it. So therefore, the malach doesn't make you forget it completely. The Maral says, if you want somebody to forget something, you hit him on the head. Don't hit him on the mouth. The mouth is the interface between what is actual and what is potential. So the malach just says, from now on, the Torah I taught you is there, but you're going to have to access it. You're going to have to open your mouth and re-access it, but it's all there in your hard drive. You're going to have to now access it, because if it wouldn't be in your hard drive, you couldn't get it in a physical world. And the purpose is not to have it, but to access it, to bring out the potential to the actual. That's the purpose of this world. And therefore, when we come to comfort the child for forgetting his learning, it's a different kind of comforting than the normal comforting of an avil. The normal comforting of an avil is somebody died. You come to them and say, look, you have to accept it. You have to get used to it. You have to go on with life. That kind of nichum aveilim is sad. You don't do it on Shabbos. But I guarantee you there's another kind of nichum aveilim. I don't have any proof, but it's clear that this nichum aveilim will be 100% mutar on Shabbos, but on Yishayla. What is that? Somebody comes to the avil and says there's been a terrible mistake. The person's not dead. That nichum aveilim, I guarantee you, is mutar on Shabbos. Same thing. We come to the child and say, don't cry over the Torah. It's there. You don't forget it. You just have to access it, and that's the purpose of this world. And that's the whole purpose of Bris Milah. So this prepares for the Bris. And not only that, Shabbos is the goal. What is the goal? Olam Haba. Shabbos is an echo of Olam Haba. So before you're going to go through all the things of this world, of having to get that yoke and actualize your potential, before you start that whole thing, first experience what the goal is. That's Shabbos. This is the goal. The goal is to reach that perfection. You're going to have to accept a yoke, and you're going to have to put in a lot of effort, but it's worth it. This is the goal. So we come, and we Menachem Avol, and tell the child, don't cry over the fact that you forgot your learning. It's there. But now you're going to have to access it. That's the whole purpose of this world. It's not there that you should just have it by a present. Because for a present, you could have stayed in Olam Haba. It's given to you, but you're going to have to bring it out. You're going to have to access it. That's the idea. So that ends this Mishnah. That's the concept of all, I'm a Kabbalah of all Torah. And if you don't have the all Torah, you have to have some all. Call Gufed, everybody was created to toil. So fortune is the person who's toils in Torah. But if it's not in Torah, then you're going to have to perfect the world through physical labor and through conversation, communication, whatever. All those are legitimate ways of perfecting yourself and perfecting the world. And if you accept the yoke of Torah to perfect the world with that, then you don't have to bring out your potential in the other areas. That covers it. If you don't do it that way, you're going to have the other ways. All Malchus and all Derech Eretz. You're going to have to do it by perfecting the world in a physical way. That's the idea. Okay, next week in Mitzvah Hashem, we'll start the next Mishnah.
Very nicely, yeah. Yes. You never know, huh?